Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, The Low Post. It's the number one NBA podcast for a reason. Top executives, coaches, players, and the best analysis in the game. Be sure to check it out. You can follow The Low Post now as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Also, The Ultimate Fighter, the reality show that brings top MMA prospects together under one roof to compete for a UFC contract, is back. Stream the season premiere on Tuesday, June 1st, only on ESPN+. Sign up now at ESPNPlus.com. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening. Wherever you get your podcast, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to get you ready for the NBA play-in tournament. We got your stories about quitting your jobs and a little surprise for you. But first, all right, so Saturday, we got the induction ceremony for the 2020 Hall of Fame class for basketball. Remember, they had to shut it down last year, obviously, because, you know, I'm doing my hand in a circle, all of this, right? The 2021 class will be inducted in September. And this, as you know, was one of the more star-studded Hall of Fame classes that we've had. I think the most star-studded Hall of Fame class that we had probably what, the 2009 with Jordan, Stockton, David Robinson. I may even be forgetting somebody, right? Like, it was loaded in that way. This year, we wound up with Kevin Garnett, with Tim Duncan, and with Kobe Bryant. And for my eighth time, people, we also wound up with Rudy T getting into the Hall of Fame. Got to send that shout out. Kim Mulkey got into the Hall of Fame. Gabe, I know you was a little busy this weekend. Did you happen to see the induction ceremony?
I saw a couple of clips. I saw some pieces of Vanessa Bryant's speech.
You ain't see the way that Mike and Kim Mulkey were looking at each other?
No, I didn't see that.
Mike seemed to love Kim Mulkey. He got that big old smile when she came up. And the thing about it is, and this is like, Kim Mulkey, of course, is a little bit of a different situation because she loved to get fly. Like, we see that during the games or whatever. Like, one interesting thing about this, particularly with women, the new generation is different because of Instagram and everything else. But like, Tamika Catchings went in. We don't tend to see female basketball players of that era like getting fly. Like, Tamika Catchings shut it down. She was like, yo, I finally get my chance to stunt on y'all at the Hall of Fame. She got up. She gave a great speech. Kevin Garnett, got to say, I don't want to say his speech was disappointing because that wouldn't be fair. But, you know, it wasn't like, he was kind of hoping for like the all the smoke, Kevin Garnett, right? Like, this happens to us from time to time where we get ourselves misunderstood about what these cats are going to do when they get into the Hall of Fame. Like Ricky Henderson, I was like, oh, Ricky going to give it to us. But no, Ricky wrote that stuff down and was trying to be presentable and stuff like that when he got in. It was a little disappointing when that shook out. There's also, I don't know if y'all remember when Emmitt Smith went into Hall of Fame and we were all just trying to figure out what in the world he was going to give us. Because if you remembered Emmitt Smith's time, like NFL Countdown, he was working for us. There was reason to believe that his speech was going to be debacled. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was going to get blowed out all by himself when he got up there and gave that talk. But no, it was very good. He practiced a whole lot, and I was kind of hoping he would just wing it, right? Kevin Garnett, I was hoping that we get like the super intense, heavy Kevin Garnett, because I'll listen to him talk about anything. Speaking of all the smoke, and part of why I brought this up, they put out a clip from when they did their live show at the All-Star Game where Kevin Garnett did that interview, the one where he told the story about when he talked Michael Jordan into putting that run on him. You seen that one? J.R. Smith talking about it too. Like, nah, Mike, he young. He just excited, you know, and all that. But in the same one, Kevin Garnett tells this great story. You know, who was it that you knew would talk that trash and give it to you in the game? And he was like, Tim Duncan. He was like, and it's Kevin Garnett. He says, see, what y'all don't understand, y'all don't really see it because Timmy, you didn't see it verbally because Timmy does not talk in sentences. Timmy talks in phrases. Oh, almost. And then he goes, this the worst one. Nice try. Right? So, can you imagine how heated you would be if Tim Duncan put something on you and was like, nice try? Because you can't talk no shit to Tim Duncan. What can you say back to Tim Duncan? Like, that's the thing about Steph Curry. When Steph be out here stunting on these dudes and doing that shimmy and everything else, you can't get nowhere talking smack about Tim Duncan. It's the situation that Meek Mill found himself in when he was trying to bring it to Drake.
Oh yeah, Drake, I'm soft. Okay, right?
Like everything that was out there, there's nothing that you can say. Like them cats like Duncan and them, I don't feel like they should be allowed to talk smack to you because you can't really talk any smack back to them. And if they go too far, what you gonna look like punching Steph Curry in the mouth? How that gonna seem? I don't think you want to punch Tim Duncan in the mouth, by the way, because something tells me Tim Duncan will let it all loose on you. He's strong as an ox. Like, that's the thing about Tim Duncan as a basketball player that gets lost. And it's going to get lost more and more as we go. And this is something I think I'm going to talk about, like, more in depth later. But as the NBA has decided that they wanted to emphasize what they're calling skill in the game, right? And they change all the rules to, like, necessitate. Basically, everybody in the NBA is good at basketball. Not that the cats back in the day weren't good, but there's nobody, like, in the league whose job it is to rebound. You know what I'm saying? There's only like two or three people whose job in the NBA it is to be strong. Like, that's what you're here for, to be strong as hell. We ain't really got those. So we don't think about that so much as a variable. Tim Duncan was strong as hell. Like, you look at them shots that he was putting up on people, that was by virtue of just being strong as hell, right? Like, okay, you right there, you haven't given an inch. I'm still going to put this jumper up right here, dead in your face. Like, in the name of strong, it wasn't like put the shoulder in your chest kind of strong. But he was diesel out there, right? Like, that was the big thing with Tim Duncan that made him bring it. So he's out here muscling you, hitting 18-foot bank shots in your eye, got these crazy post moves, got these clips where he's out here crossing dudes over and making them fall down. All of this stuff, right? Like, all you know about Tim Duncan, it's similar to Jokic. Like, well, what does he do that's so good? He just keeps making shots? But I don't see what it is. You see them buckets? You see the scoreboard, like you see what's going on there, right? So anyway, that was, yeah, so KG and Isaiah, I see you fellas. But Rudy is interesting to me because they put Rudy in as a coach. And I think this may speak to a general loosening of what coaches they're going to let in the Hall of Fame, because they just don't really let NBA coaches into the Hall of Fame. Like, people have been like, Eric Spoelstra is a sure Hall of Fame coach. I mean, he'll get into it one day, I imagine, if they put Rudy in. Then they'll ultimately put Spo in, though I think that Rudy winning those two championships with the Rockets, especially the first one, which was Hakeem Olajuwon and 11 dudes, is more impressive than winning two championships with LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. And then if you do put Spo in, we're waiting on Casey Jones, who went to the NBA Finals as a head coach, 84, 85, 87, and 86. So four times. And by the way, as a coach, he also got the Bullets to the NBA Finals in 1975 and only had one season that was not a winning season in his whole career as a coach, right? Like, so if you're going to put Rudy in, you got to put this dude in. But I was just glad to see those Rockets like get some shine, get some credit, because it's the championships that people act like never happened. And if you know Rudy's story, that man's been through some ups and downs, and that's not even talking about him getting punched in the face, you know? So like, this is one of those for Houston. This is a big deal, because I do not think that nationally those champions get the credit they deserve for being champions. So good for him. But Gabe, you mentioned Vanessa Bryant giving her speech for Kobe Bryant. And I cannot imagine how unfun this weekend was for her, right? And so this is why I say that. I'll tell you a story. My alma mater awarded me something that they came up with. It's called the Spirit of Greatness Award. It's like a very big thing at the school. And it was, you know, me for being a big deal alumnus and all of this stuff, right? It's a fundraising thing. I think they thought they were going to get more money out of me, and they never actually got the money out of me. And if they want some money out of me, maybe we can talk or whatever. But, you know, like, y'all ain't cultivated this relationship properly, is what I'm saying here. Anyway, but I find that I now get anxious in settings where everybody just gonna be walking up on me, right? And so when you're in something like that, everybody's kind of gonna like kind of walk up on you and talk to you because this is their chance and so forth and so on and everything else. Now, for me, it was a little different, man, because I just had people walking up on me to being like, hey, take a picture with me and Bomani. You haven't even said a word to me yet. I don't know you, right? But that's what happens in those circumstances where people feel like we're all family here. Because that's what happens. You know, I went to a relatively small school. Like, we're all family here. And so everybody, like, oh, family, right? And so everybody gets into this family place. And you just get people walking up on you. And they're more comfortable to come up and talk to you than they ordinarily would. And they're strangers. And you don't really have much to say to them necessarily because you don't really know them. And then they ask you the same questions. It's the same, you know, all those things. It's not really pleasant. But those were people coming to talk to me about me. Imagine being Vanessa Bryant in that room and all these people want to come talk to you about your dead husband, you know? And look, she loves him and she has done everything in the world to like continue his legacy in this time since he passed away, you know, and all of those things. But that relationship was complex, right? Like, we know enough about them to know that it's not as two-dimensional as it's going to be presented to us as being. There's no telling what the feelings and emotions that she generally had about, you know, this is another big Kobe thing and she is there to basically be Kobe, right? I don't know how much time she ever spent in these rooms with all of these people before. You know, I don't know any of that. I just can easily imagine how just stressful it had to be in a room with all these people who all want to come up and tell you what at this point, as you're moving on with your life, you probably don't necessarily want to hear, which is just, I'm so sorry about your loss. You know, over and over and over. And people probably getting a little bit too friendly and too familiar. And they all think that they're doing well. They all mean well. They all trying to be there for you, you know, and all of this stuff. Like, it's probably annoying enough for her to be there if Kobe had been there with her, just having to talk to all these people in a setting like that, that you don't really know. You know, all these people that are not your homies, they are not your folks. And she dealt with that and she got up there and she gave that speech. And man, she made something different. And I mean that in a good way, right? Like, her ability to stand and do these things and be this representative of a person who means so much to so many people and having to deal with, like, you know, these people don't know your man. You know what I mean? You know, these people don't know him like that. And I don't know her personally, obviously, but I could see how if she were the type to be annoyed by the fact that y'all all swear up and down y'all love him, but y'all ain't really know him. You know, the idea that you have to share the love of your life with the rest of the world. This doesn't belong just to you. This belongs to everybody that's out here. This belonged to LA. This belonged to China. This belonged to the world. This belonged to everybody else. Like, that's a lot, man. That all just, as I watched it in the whole way, like, that's just, that's a lot to ask out of anybody. And there's no way in that for her to opt out of it. You know, she just can't be like, yo, man, I can't handle this. Like, imagine she had gotten there and it had just been too much. You know, that wasn't it. You got to deal with the awkward relationship between the Bryants and the Bryants, right? Like, Joe and his wife and everything that comes with that. I admire her for the way that she was able to do this because she's doing it for us, you know, like, she's doing that for the general public. I don't think that she personally is getting anything out of doing this. You know, she's doing this for the world because she recognized that in a lot of ways, Kobe belongs to the world. But in the end, Kobe belongs to her and Kobe belongs to those girls. And so I would assume after this, there's not going to be too many events like this that she's going to have to endure, you know, where she's going to have to put on the good face and all of that stuff in order to make this work. But I give all the credit in the world to her for just the dignity with when I hate to use that word because I feel like we can be patronizing when we do that. But I don't know if I could have done it. I have no idea if I could have done it. We saw her do it at the memorial service and then you got to do it again. Like, this is basically another funeral speech. Like, you imagine having to, like, all right, now go do that again. You know, and that was rough, man. So I give the credit to her. I thought it was a dope ceremony and it was good to have. And yeah, I normally try to come up with something snappy to like wrap up these blocks, but rest in peace to Kobe Bryant, because I know what he meant to the rest of y'all. Just don't forget what that definitely had to mean to her. Oh, cool. I came up with something snappy. So, LeBron James will be in the play-in tournament. The Lakers needed a win and a Portland loss on Sunday to avoid the play-in tournament. Portland wound up winning. Gabe, you ready for it? It's your squad and like the hometown going against each other, right? We got the Lakers and we got the Warriors.
And among other things, Steph has got a shaved head.
Yeah, no, it's a different level to shave. He went in, he was doing quarantine hair things, and then he decided not to do quarantine hair things. And then he decided to put up 22 threes in that game. Like, he put up that 46, and that 46 is impressive, but it was like 46 on 36 shots. Like, this wasn't like the greatest Steph Curry game that we've ever seen. Then he put up 50 in 29 minutes the other day, but it was a sign of what it's going to be for them, man. Pass the ball to Steph. Like, I raised the question here. Like, is he the guy really that you run the Bel Air Academy offense through? Well, damn it, we going to find out. Because that is all the offense that they have. That is it, is pass the ball to Steph. And so we're going to get the Lakers and the Warriors in this play-in game. And I am very curious to see how Steve Kerr plays it, at least in that first play-in game. The second one, you playing for your life if they wind up in that one. But if you watch that game on Sunday, and if you listen to Warriors fans, one of their big giant Steve Kerr complaints is how long he leaves Steph on the bench to start the fourth quarters. Now, to be fair to Kerr, I don't think Steph's a dude that you can have out here playing 40 minutes. Like, nobody comes out here anymore is playing. Like you go look at the numbers that guys were putting up 15 years ago in terms of minutes played per game. You don't see those numbers like that anymore. Like, nobody's coming out here clocking 42 minutes a game and stuff like that. I think it's in part just because the pace has gotten so much higher and everything else. And teams are deeper. They're better players. You can go a little farther. So I don't know how much Kerr should play Curry. I don't know where the diminishing returns come in. But, man, them leads get shaky when Curry's out, right? And in the fourth quarter, he sat him for as long as he could. I think it was 3 minutes this time. He called a timeout. They brought Curry back in the game. And then they lost the rest of the lead. Like, it basically came down to a tie. And then Dylan Brooks fouled out. And then the Grizzlies just didn't have anybody that could do anything with Curry. Ja Morant couldn't make a shot, and they just decided, like, the playoffs started for Ja Morant right there. And what happens in the playoffs, this is something I don't understand why it doesn't happen more in the regular season, but you ever notice this? That when you get to the playoffs, like, you remember that year when the Warriors and the Grizzlies played, and I think it was the conference finals, but they played against each other, and the Warriors just decided we're going to put Andrew Bogut on Tony Allen, and we're just going to leave Tony Allen out there wide open to shoot. Why don't people do that all the time? Like, that's something I really don't get. Like, that becomes a playoff adjustment for a lot of these guys who can't shoot. But I've never quite understood, like, he can't shoot then either. Why don't you just let him, like, not be able to shoot all the time or whatever, right? But that's what they did to Ja Morant. Like, there was one play where Kyle Anderson, Ja Morant had missed a shot. I think Kyle Anderson got the rebound. He passed it back to Ja Morant. He's standing by himself for long enough that Kyle Anderson was going like this, like, shoot the ball, man. Shoot the ball. Right? Like, every time people get on Russell Westbrook for shooting those shots he can't make, sometimes you just have to do it because they're daring you to do it, and it's kind of disrespectful. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to at least give it a go. And then in the end, like I said, the Grizzlies couldn't make shots. The Warriors wound up winning. How long can they afford to sit Steph Curry in games with the season on the line? Because that's what these next two are going to be. Like, if LeBron looks halfway capable, and he's looked all right, you know? But if LeBron looks halfway capable, do you think the Warriors can beat them in a winner take all?
I don't think so. I mean, Steph's got to be playing out of his absolute mind. LeBron's got to be putting up stinkers, and AD's got to be putting up stinkers just by virtue of bodies.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot to ask. But what I do think we're going to see out of this, and this is something I do not think that those Warriors got credit for. Like, it's going to be interesting as we go back in time and reevaluate them. But it really came to bear after it was clear they weren't going to win that Toronto series. Like, in that game where Klay Thompson tore his ACL and everything, they stepped up like champs. Like, that's the Rudy T quote, that never underestimate a heart of a champion. Another thing we'll talk about more deeply later, but as toughness has become less of a variable and factor that we care about in the NBA, ain't nobody in the NBA that we look at like, yo, that dude is tough. That's why I rock with him. There are no Charles Oakley's, Anthony Mason's, like those types of players. Like, we don't have them anymore. And so we don't have nearly as much that comes up to make us look at a guy and just be like, yo, that dude is just gritting it out, right? Like, look at the heart that that dude is displaying. Those Warriors in 2019 showed so much heart as that was wrapping up, and it was clear they were not going to win it, and they never gave up. They went hard on that, right? And what I saw in that game against the Grizzlies also was some of that, because they were, you know, they were playing to get into that eight game. And as much as, like, LeBron's like, yo, whoever came up with this should be fired, he gonna be playing his ass off in this game. All of them, they're going to be playing hard as hell to make this happen. It is exactly what the NBA needed, right? That's what it is that we are going to get. Just got to make sure that the Lakers make it. That's all. And I'd like to send a shout out to the Suns and a shout out to the Jazz. Y'all worked so hard to get the top seeds in your conference, and your reward is going to be playing against, in all likelihood, either LeBron James or Steph Curry. Way to go. Like, and this is where it gets funny. The NBA, Gabe, do you remember the era of the 5-game first round series?
Yes, I do. Kind of like what Luka's comment about the play-in tournament was, like, it doesn't make sense that if you could have such a great regular season, you make it all the way to the postseason and you could get bounced in just a couple of games. So it's not quite fair. And then they changed it. When was that?
I believe the change came at the beginning of the 21st century. So we had 2 years where a 1 seed lost to an 8 seed. That was 94 when Seattle lost to Denver, and then 99 when the Heat lost to the Knicks that ultimately made the NBA Finals. And I think after that, they went ahead and made the change, right? It's one of the worst decisions I think the NBA ever made. It made more money for people, but it took away the intrigue of the first round. You ain't got time to get this on track. You got to get out here and you got to get it done, right? That's what I think the NBA should have had. But they were like, damn, we're losing top seeds. That's bad for business, so forth and so on. What's going to happen to your top seeds in the West now, baby? And guess what? You know what the NBA wants? Please get them out of here. Get the Mountain Time Zone out of here and give us LeBron and Steph or Dame. We would have loved nothing more than that. And it could happen. Like, I think Utah is going to be a little harder to take out because those guys have been to the playoffs before. But the Suns, that's rickety. Like, no matter how much you love Devin Booker, he ain't played on this level before. They've never played with any level of expectation. And it's interesting because the bottom half of the bracket in the West looks like those are the guys that have played with some level of expectation before. Portland has played with a level of expectation. The Lakers have played with a level of expectation. The Warriors have played with a level of expectation. Dallas, they just getting there. But all these other folks have played with a level of expectation. But man, listen. We also got this possibility, Gabe, that if the Lakers were to go into the 8 and beat Utah, we could get Lakers-Clippers second round. Yeah, we could wind up with Lakers-Nuggets conference finals. That would be a little far down the line for me to get, but we got chances. I look at this and I see in the playoffs just a lot of good series that we could ultimately have in both conferences. The Sixers got lucky because the Heat wound up as the 6 and did not wind up in the play-in or wind up in the 4. They weren't going to wind up in the play-in, but they didn't wind up at the 4 because I don't think the Sixers want to see the Lakers in the second round. Like, looking at it, I think the Sixers and the Bucks are going to be in the conference finals in the East. And I want to send a shout out to all you Sixers fans because I sent a tweet after they lost in the bubble last year. I was trolling, definitely. And I was like, ha, ha, ha. All those years of talking about the process, and it obviously didn't work, right? Like, I was needling them as they lost. They won the number 1 seed, and you sorry, pathetic, desperate bums hit me up about that tweet. I want to make sure everybody out here understands this. Even you, Ryan Cortez, though I love you. If you are part of blank Twitter, you are a dork. No matter what fills in the blank, if you believe that you are part of blank Twitter, you are a dork. And so all the Sixers people were descending upon me. Not because they won the championship. Not because they won the finals. The conference finals. Because they got the number 1 seed. We all know what good that did Milwaukee the last couple years now, don't we? About winning the number 1 seed in the East. You were wrong. You were wrong. Dog, y'all been doing this damn process for 8 years. It doesn't change the fact. And this is, and I want to be clear about this with this process. I thought that it was beneath the NBA, the way they handled that to begin with. I do not think that all that embarrassment was worth being a team that loses in the second round, which is what they've been up until this point. I think this will probably be better. Yes, you got superstars, except you didn't get superstars. You got superstar and you got Ben Simmons, right? You did all of that to get a dude who refuses to shoot, okay? Well, we did da-da-da and all that stuff. This is where we were before. Go look around the rest of the league, man. It's a whole lot of teams that managed to get really good without embarrassing themselves. And you guys, 8 years after starting this damn process, y'all still crossing y'all's fingers and hoping that this works out, right? So I think Embiid, healthy Embiid, top 3 or 4 player in the NBA, right? Like, I don't want you to think I'm a hater. Ben Simmons, top 3 or 4 defensive player in the NBA. Flawed, but that's what it is. But all that you did was to get what still remains a pretty good team. a pretty good team. I think y'all thought y'all could have like two superstars and then like a couple of all-stars, except you drafted poorly outside of those two guys. And the thing about the process that's interesting to me is they got lucky in 2014 that they didn't get the number one pick, because I doubt they would have taken Embiid if they had the number one pick. Keep it in mind, we thought that was going to be an all-time great draft and it didn't work out that way, right? And then they got lucky that they did get the pick the year that Simmons was number one. Although I still think they might have been better off if they had Ingram, just because Ingram provides things that Simmons does not, like the ability to shoot. But I just couldn't believe all it took was the number one seed. Take your L, Bomani. Take your L. Let's talk after the playoffs. And if there's an L for me to take, I will take the L. And I will say this. If y'all make the conference finals, I think we're at neutral. Y'all ain't even got to win a championship. If you make the NBA finals, I'll take the L. Y'all think y'all going to make the finals? Like, I'm asking you sincerely. I'm going to do it like Kevin Durant did CJ McCollum. Like, you don't think you're going to win the championship, do you? If y'all make it to the NBA Finals, I'll take that L. I ain't got no problem. Being wrong ain't hard for me. One thing you always got to remember, when people try to get in my face and be like, yo, admit that you're wrong, never forget this, okay? All of you. This is what you need to understand. I am a better person than you. And I bring that up because saying I'm wrong isn't that hard. It's not that hard at all. Gabe, you've heard me come out here and say I was wrong. You heard me do that with the Steph Curry thing, even as Vinny put it on me to be the one to say that we was wrong, because he couldn't come out here and say it himself. Did you peep how he did that? Oh, yeah, you weren't here last week. Tony was here for that. Vinny was like, why don't you do your Akeem Olajuwon impression to say where we coming from, so I could be the one to say that we was wrong. I got no problem saying that I'm wrong. Just because you too weak to do that, don't think it hurts me. Don't think it's a bad thing for me. Just recognize, Bomani greater than you. So when I say I'm wrong, it's not going to satisfy you, because it's not going to hurt me. You want me to feel pain. You want me to be embarrassed. You want me to be you. And I want you to be me. Be better.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, this first story comes from business.
This is Mike Baker, a reporter at the New York Times. Right now, the Boy Scouts of America are in bankruptcy court for what is shaping up to be a multi-billion dollar battle. How many billions? I guess it depends on who you ask. About 85,000 people have come forward with sexual abuse allegations against the scouting organization. Now lawyers are hashing out how to compensate the victims, how much they should be paid, and who should be on the hook for funding the effort. But some of the money is already heading out the door to the lawyers involved in settling on the details. Legal and professional fees have now already surpassed $100 million in the case. By August, it could be $150 million. One lawyer has charged $1,725 for each hour of work. Many of them are charging more than $1,000 an hour. Even the new lawyers fresh out of law school have been billing at an hourly rate of more than $600. A judge in the case has called the fee totals staggering, and a lawyer for one of the insurance companies has called it sickening. While attorney fees in other areas of legal practice are often much lower than $1,000 an hour, the world of big-ticket bankruptcy court has developed into a particularly lucrative practice for top law firms. And the Boy Scouts of America bankruptcy is the latest example of that.
Yo, so this got me to thinking. Like, one of my homeboys is in a fraternity that had a problem for many years with beating people up when they were pledging. And he was like, yo, man, we do all our conventions in little bitty small towns because that's all we can afford because of lawsuits, right? They just kept getting sued. And so, like, with an organization like the Boy Scouts and how this went on for as long as it did, shame trumps money. Like, it's the same thing that happens with the cops. Shame trumps money. Like, you are willing to spend all this money when you could have probably cracked down on this on the front end, because you don't want to take the shame that comes from cracking down on the front end, like from admitting it. So you'd rather somebody sue you and you on some level deny or try to get some settlement out of it or whatever. But in the end, these organizations that have allowed such untoward treatment to the people that they're supposed to care for, supposed to protect and all that stuff, you're going to go broke behind it. you're all going to go broke behind it. Like with the Boy Scouts, it's just going to be so easy to find people to put in lawsuits, and y'all going to go broke behind this. Like the whole organization going to shut down. Rather than you making it better, you'll let all this happen just to like let it all go away and fall apart. Like USA Gymnastics, I don't know how much longer they're going to be able to exist, you know? And they all had opportunities to do something about this. And nobody wanted to show any dirt. Nobody did. And it's just like a wild psychology associated with that. Because I refuse to believe that somebody couldn't get all the credit in the world for being the one to step up, right? And say, hey, we found this thing was happening and we shut this down. Like instead of trying to hide it. Because clearly a lot of these organizations are able to survive it after they get caught. So go ahead and own it. Instead, they kind of survive it, but they don't because they end up broke.
All right, Bo, this next story also comes from business.
I'm Hannah Ziyadi with CNN Business, and if you haven't heard, house prices are skyrocketing around the world despite the pandemic. It wasn't long ago that real estate experts were bracing for a collapse in the housing market, as generally happens in economic downturns. But actually, the opposite has occurred. Among the 37 wealthy countries that make up the OECD, real house prices increased by almost 7% between the fourth quarter of 2019 and the fourth quarter of 2020. That's the fastest year-on-year growth in the past two decades and took place despite the world suffering its worst recession since the Great Depression. So what is going on? Broadly speaking, three big factors are driving this. First, governments around the world helped homeowners during the pandemic by temporarily banning repossessions and providing trillions of dollars of support for workers and businesses. Think furlough programs, stimulus checks, and coronavirus loans. Second, interest rate cuts have kept mortgage repayments affordable, while in some countries, temporary reductions to taxes on home purchases have spurred home buying. But perhaps most surprising of all, the coronavirus pandemic itself has turbocharged prices. As we were all forced to transform houses into offices and classrooms, a race for space took hold. As one buying agent in the UK put it to me, people are panic buying houses like they were panic buying toilet paper 12 months ago for fear they might run out. So frenzied is the market that in some countries such as New Zealand and China, governments are looking at ways to prevent their housing markets from overheating, such as tightening credit restrictions and upping taxes on purchases by investors. But with interest rates expected to remain low for some time to come, and the pandemic introducing lasting changes to the way we live and work, experts are not expecting this boom to bust anytime soon.
Dog, these houses going like, I'm talking to people who are looking at houses, like house up a day, house down. People getting 30, 40,000 more than they asking for. And I don't mean that like in New York where the prices are crazy, right? Like I'm talking about like North Carolina where the prices are decent. Like everything is just going straight through the roof on this. And good luck, right? Part of that being, if you haven't owned a home before, it's a bit of a hassle, guys. Like when you're younger, you're like, oh, you understand the point of renting, right? No, I get it 100%. I totally get it. Something break, I call them. You know, I ain't got to do nothing about that stuff. I ain't got to get you no down payment. I ain't got to do all of those things. But you talk to anybody that's out here trying to buy a house, man, them things is moving like hotcakes. And really caused by the idea that people are like, yo, I'm going to need to be able to do all this stuff at the house. People tired of being on top of each other. I also think a big part of it is people are just tired of being in the same space. Like, I think a big part of it is people want to move just because they've been where they are so long. Like, I look at little things that I've changed out in my house just because I'm here all the time. You know, bought a new bedspread. Did I need a new bedspread? Nah, but I did. Right? Got a new rug in the living room. Why? It was a good play to make. Like, you know, put a little something on the wall. I got a plant in the corner. All of this. Like, just to shake it up a little bit, you know? And I think that's where people are going. But you add this into some of these cities also where this gentrification is getting crazy. Like, I'm looking at what houses going for in Atlanta in some neighborhoods that I would not set foot in the dark, even though I lived in the next neighborhood over. Man, they selling $400,000-$500,000 houses in there. And they moving like that. Like that. They are racing out there. So yeah, man, good luck to you if you're trying to buy a house because you need to make a decision quick. That's the other thing. I can't imagine walking into a house, doing a lap around and being like, cool, I'll give you $400,000. But that's what you got to do now. Like, if you want to get that house, I don't recommend you walk out of there. I just don't.
I mean, it's interesting how things have flipped too, because during 2020, I mean, the middle of the pandemic, was that not a down year for real estate where people were having to sell homes at low prices?
Also, part of it, though, was that it was difficult to go see them. Like, I re-upped on my lease at my place when I did not want to because I was not going to make a decision about a domicile off of you walking around with your phone, showing me what the place looked like. I'm just like, no, I'm not doing that, right? I'd rather pay the extra that I'm paying to live where I am than roll the dice on something that I don't even know if I'm going to like. I don't even know if I want movers doing anything for me. There were a lot of impediments in place to buying houses that really ain't there right now. What I worry about for these people that are doing this, though, man, is I don't know what this economy about to be. I don't know what this economy about to do. I imagine some of y'all have scored on this Bitcoin and all of this stuff. But I don't know if you saw this. This one company, I forget which coin they have, but they have like they claim to have like $42 billion or something in circulation of this coin. And early on, they had said that they had 1-to-1 in their reserves. That they had, if it was $2 billion out there of the coin, they had $2 billion in cash as reserves. That's what they were talking. And then they had to file for the SEC, you know, put their paperwork in, and their reserve ratio was 2.9%, which implies that this bubble is a bubble and some of this is going to come down. Yeah, you might want to cash them coins. Like, you know, I've been a funny money skeptic for a very long time, and that makes people think that I'm a hater. I'm just telling you, like, you know, this don't make no sense.
Not exactly the gold standard.
No, no.
The equivalent back in Fort Knox.
Yes. No, no, no. That's not it at all. That's not it at all.
All right.
Actually, Gabe, I have the last story for if you haven't heard.
We have one more. We're not going to do the last
one. No, no, no. I got one here, and it's from education.
Hey, Gabe, this is your wife.
And your dad.
We were asked to, you know, put together a little message for you celebrating your huge accomplishment, becoming a master. So we wanted to talk a little bit about some lessons that were shared during the ceremony that can benefit all listeners. So, Mike, what stood out to you?
Well, what stood out was the fact that Gabe was sitting all by himself in a row because we were social distancing. But what I also have to say is, for me, to see my son go through this process and realize how hard he worked on all fronts with his profession, with school, this was a culmination of great effort. And all I could feel was just tremendous pride and respect.
No, I just have to say too, Gabe, I am so proud of you. I saw how hard you worked for this, late nights after work, you know, pushing through, attending class, completing exams and assignments. So a huge accomplishment.
Absolutely. Gabe, props to you. Just so happy for you. And we know that you're someone who believes in continuous improvement, that you always want to better yourself in some form or fashion. And we're glad that you're carrying the flag for Bomani, but we're also glad that you just went through this incredible challenge and you're on the other side now. So congratulations.
So this is your wife and your dad signing off.
Take care.
So for those of you who do not know, Gabe completed his Master's of Business Administration and graduated over last weekend. That's why we did not have him in last week, is because he was taking time to spend with his family. And finally, an MBA that I can respect. Congratulations to you, man. You know, I've been working with Gabe now for about 3 years. And so he's been doing all of this. Working on this podcast is not his only job within the company. So he has all kinds of other things that he does while he has also been working on an MBA and putting in the grind to get all that done and figured out and understood while also being a loving and doting husband and all of these things. And with no complaint that I have ever heard, he has managed to do all these things while making this podcast what it has ultimately become. So all of us wish you the biggest and grandest congratulations.
Man, that is incredibly touching. The fact that you guys lined up my wife and my dad for that, I don't know when they got the time to do that, considering I was with them for the last week nonstop, but that's nice of you guys to set that up for me.
This ain't about us. This is you, man. Like, this is incredible stuff that you have managed to pull off, man. Like, it's legitimately admirable to watch and see it, man. Congratulations.
Thank you, dude. Thank you. Yeah, it was a shit ton of work. When I was at the graduation, I saw, you know how like on people have their cap and gowns and people will put like little beads and stuff on them? I saw one that really spoke to me. This guy had in beads on his cap, never again. Mm-hmm. And that one directly spoke to me.
you are done.
I am done. I am absolutely done. More work than I could have ever imagined. I'm just glad it's over with. My dad was like, what's next for you? You thinking about going, you know, getting your PhD? You're going to get your JD? I'm like, no, I'm done. That's it. I never imagined that it would be something that I would have gone for or tried to do. But yeah, I'm just glad it's over.
Yeah, man. It's hard work. You pulled it off, man. Proud of you.
Thanks, guys.
And it worked out very well that our third, if you haven't heard, contributor didn't put in a voicemail. That made for a nice little smooth. Somebody ghosted on us. And this made for a nice smooth transition.
Saved the day.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right. Voicemail segment time. Going to try and rebound hard here. Quitting on the job. Was there anything that brought it up this week, or are we just going back to it because it is a fantastic topic in terms of the quality of voicemails that we get?
Yeah, and I know Aaron Rodgers really want to quit his job. Like, I think that's what kind of, like, took me in the angle. I know Aaron Rodgers really want to quit his job. And, you know, it'd be hard to come up with this stuff. So, yeah, oldie but goodie, somewhat topical. Let's do it.
Well, I'm sure we got a bunch of good ones. The first one comes from Aaron in San Diego.
What's up, Bo? All right, so I graduated college in December 1997 with a marketing degree. And in the months leading up to graduating, I went on like a dozen interviews. I couldn't land nothing. So I finally got a gig with a software startup doing like business-to-business cold call sales. Now, I knew I wasn't wired for sales, and they gave us like a one-page script, and that wasn't going to make me learn nothing about no software. And the base salary wasn't great, but it was enough, you know, for me to spend about a month making like fake sales calls and surfing the internet all day. So at the end of that month, I came into the office on a Monday, tried to log in, access denied. I tried again, access denied. Now, that should have been the only red flag I needed, but I, like, stupidly went looking for my boss anyway. Boss tells me, just sit tight. The big boss is driving in. We'll talk about it together. I look down at my boss's desk, and I see a dot matrix printout with my pager number on it over and over and over again. Yes, I spent, like, an entire month making fake sales calls to my pager voicemail, and the jig was up. I gave old boy my most dramatic, you can't fire me, I quit. Then I spent the rest of the day figuring out what lie I had to tell my future wife.
Yo, I need to hear the rest about how you became a better man. Aaron, how did you think this was going to go? You didn't think you actually had to sell anything? You thought all you had to do was make the calls? I'm floored.
You can't fire me, I quit.
Dog, I'm almost at the point where I want to, like, sound like the kind of person I never am, which is to say, you out here making us look bad. I had to come up with a lie to tell my wife. She know you ain't shit. She know you lazy. Like, I just, like you could come up with the lie. I imagine that once you did, she was like, all right, so what really happened? Why you don't never be working late? Wow. Sorry, Aaron. I didn't mean to turn the tables on you. I was just imagining different kinds of stories. Like, I was thinking about people who were so fed up with their jobs that they quit, as opposed to, let me get ahead of this right fast. I don't think about, like, people walking out the shift at Burger King. Not this.
Well, speaking of Burger King, speaking of walking off on the job, our next one, it relates to Pizza Hut.
I'm here.
So it sounds like it's going to be a good one. All right, here it is. The guy didn't leave his name.
Hi, bro. So peep it. I was 19. I had just got to college. You know, mom's covering the bills, so I ain't really got much room to talk. But I decided I'm going to get me a job or whatever at Pizza Hut because I worked it back home. So, man, this pizza, I don't know if y'all ever seen it, but, like, it was a buffet-style pizza, so it was wild busy. Now, I remember one night I had a test the next day, but I scheduled off at 10, and I didn't get off till, like, 2 in the morning. Man, I failed that test, and I had called mom for something. You know, I was keeping it a buck, but I was like, yeah, my work whooped my butt. I failed that test. She was like, yeah, so you got two choices. You can either get Pizza Hut to pay you enough money to cover your bills, your dorm, and all that stuff, or you can quit your job and let me keep doing it, but you're not going to waste my money not going to class. I'm like, I bet. Sound like I don't work at Pizza Hut no more. So I go tell my manager the next day I show up. I'm off. She's like, oh, so glad you came in. We're a little short staff. I'm like, I ain't even dressed to work. I got on some Nike slides. So I was like, yeah, I need to holler at you. She's like, well, can you help us clear the table, the orders real quick, then we can talk. I was like, yeah, nah. I can't do that. My mama said I can't work here no more. Yes, I quit a job under the theory that my mama said I can't work here no more. She's like, well, can you at least fix it? I was like, nah, you understand. Mom said I'm done today. Well, that's not a way to be an adult. I was like, yeah, I get that, right? But dorm room, like, $3,700 a semester. You can't up their salary? I got to rock with moms on this one. And I walked out, and she screamed, you'll never work at a Pizza Hut again. And in my head, I'm like, I hope she right. Appreciate it, bro.
Let me tell you something about that one. My brother, he graduated from college, and he had gotten some job, but I forget what it was, but it was something that he felt like was a violation of his principles, like a legitimate violation of his principles, not being like dramatic or funny about it. And so he quit, but he had to get a job, right? And he had had a journey up until that point. And so he wound up getting a job at the Home Depot. And it's one of them jobs where you got to wear a back brace. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to wear the superstar Billy Graham belt while you at work, right? Like one of them joints. And so at some point, he said some dude came up to him and was like, that worked there. I was like, hey, man, you smart. I can see it. The managers, they can see it. But with that attitude, you ain't never going to make it to aisle manager.
This is operating on the assumption that you want to be the aisle manager.
Yeah. My brother's like, yes, exactly. He's like, damn, I hope not. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's nothing like as a bougie kid. Like, I'm just saying, as somebody who, you know, grew up fairly bourgeois, you know, our parents are professors, all of that stuff, right? So my parents' friends are professors and all of that. Like, it's some other folks that come in, but you know what I mean. There's something about getting that job as a teenager and you realize that other people, like, not everybody was expected to go to college. Different people have their different sets of ambitions. And I remember when I worked at Fuddruckers and this dude was explaining to me about how it was, like, his game. And now looking back on it, it wasn't a bad plan, right? But he was like, you know, he's trying to stack his little money up. He wanted to buy him a bobtail, like a little truck. Like, he was trying to get a CDL and get that truck driving thing going. Like, that's a good plan to, you know, get some money. Obviously no shame in it or anything. But 16-year-old me was like, that's your dream? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, that's not a backup plan? Because I had no concept of anything like that, right? And so that woman used to working with people where you could tell them, you'll never work at Pizza Hut again. They're like, damn, I might need to work at Pizza Hut one day. But this cat is like, did you hear me say I was in college?
I feel like I saw a movie called Employee of the Month when I was a little kid. You see that wall up there? You see Bob, Employee of the Month, 12 years running? Keep going like this, you're never going to be Bob. It's like, man, I don't want to be Bob.
Yeah. Like, I had never conceptualized the idea that for people, this was their career. You know what I mean? Like, I looked at it through the eyes of a teenager who didn't really need the money. And so I'm looking at working at Fuddruckers, like, it's a little something you do, you know, and then maybe you stop. And I just didn't, like, when I got to the Gap, I was like, yo, y'all are really trying to move up at the Gap. Who does that? You know, I just didn't understand the world.
Those jobs with high turnover, man.
Yep.
There's usually one or two holdouts on the staff.
I'm going to put you up on game. If you can manage to last at UPS for 2 months, the world is yours.
Well, speaking of UPS,
last
story. Didn't leave his name, but this is a UPS story.
Just so you know, I did not know this when I said UPS. This is not a segue.
Oh, my God. Yeah, here it is.
Hey, bro. My story is when I quit UPS and the first time I realized that that two-week notice didn't really mean nothing. I got a better paying job and immediately started calling off every day of my 2 weeks, even though I had no vacation days left. And on my last day, I came in and bought a big black bag full of unwashed UPS uniforms, wrote my last name on the back of one of those shirts, and hung it up in the rafters and walked out the door. It was the most incredible feeling I ever had in my life.
Dog, that is a hard job. Like, people really tell me, if you can make it like a month and a half at UPS, you'll probably be a manager. They just be turning them over. Like, I imagine there's somebody who works at UPS who works the desk, but I've never heard of anybody who got that job at UPS, right? And so, like, the pressure of working at FedEx is different. The FedEx pressure is getting it there on time. Like, don't nothing get lost with FedEx. Like, everything gets there on time. UPS, that pressure is on your spinal column. That pressure is bending with your knees. Well, you got something important, you send it FedEx. when you got something heavy, you send a UPS. Like, you think about that. How many times have you actually sent something UPS? I receive things all the time UPS, but you don't really send things UPS because that's for the heavy stuff. Okay, have you sent UPS?
I'm cheap like that. I send everything UPS.
Now, like, if I got to get it to you and it's important, I send it to you FedEx. Otherwise, I'm probably going to the post office to get it done, you know? But UPS is not, you don't send a UPS because it's important.
I'm speaking for the everyman here.
Oh, yeah.
That's something rich people say. Rich people say, I'm going to FedEx it to you.
No, I'm just saying, but if I need to send it FedEx, it's important enough that even when I didn't have the money, I would go for a FedEx. UPS is for something you don't mind if it get thrown around a little bit. You know, like my boy worked at UPS and he was like, let me tell you words that don't matter at UPS. Fragile. Handle with care. And most importantly, this side up. Those things don't mean anything at UPS. I'm just saying, it's hard to be gentle with that kind of stuff, right? That's like if you mess around and get the 50-pound weight that's made out of metal, you need something to drop that on. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't, like, you need to be able to drop that thing and not hurt yourself.
I mean, your package could be handled totally fine, yet it's sitting underneath a 50-pound weight.
Yes.
And then your package becomes half a package.
Yes, yes, yes. That's what I'm saying. UPS is for something different. That's all. I hope they don't sponsor nothing. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing 3 times a week. Gabe Bassein, MBA, and Tony Caladio and handled everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Mike Baker of the New York Times. Check out his story on the bankruptcy case involving the Boy Scouts. Also, thanks to Hannah Ziadi of CNN Business in London. Check out her story on what's happening with housing markets all around the world. Also, thank you to Gabe's father and thank you to Gabe's wife, who, by the way, is a PhD. And I mention that only because I tell Gabe this all the time, and I mean this. I knew there was going to be something a little different about you when you told me that your wife was studying for a PhD, because most dudes cannot handle such a thing. Like, I know stories about that. The first time you told me that, I was like, oh, okay, no. We got an actual smart dude here, because she wouldn't be putting up with you otherwise. That's the other thing, too. You can't be out here studying for no PhD and coming home to a dumbass. That's just not possible. Anyway, follow The Right Time. Rate us. Review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.